you guys, movie retrospective time.
Here we are again talking about another movie that won the Patreon poll by a landslide. This is 1999's The Sixth Sense.
Good movie.
It is. And you know, okay, so I have kind of like a conflicted history with this movie, I guess. I think the only time I mentioned it previously was a long time ago when we reviewed Stir of Echoes. And I remember being like really mad that Stir of Echoes came out like right around the same time as The Sixth Sense. And The Sixth Sense was such a juggernaut that it kind of buried Stir of Echoes like underneath. And in a lot of ways, I still think Stir of Echoes may be a better movie in the sense that it's creepier or scarier. But watching The Sixth Sense again, and honestly, I saw it in the theater when it came out. You know, and didn't see the twist coming. And I thought that I had seen it again since then, but watching it again yesterday, I don't think I have seen it again since then. So I haven't really maybe seen it since, you know, with the full awareness of knowing what the twist is. So it was really interesting to watch it again to like recontextualize the whole entire story and see how the movie is constructed to make you not figure out what the twist is.
Shyamalan's a weird director. He ranges from great to kind of like I don't want to say bad, almost kind of worse than bad. He almost sometimes comes across as a hack, if you ask me.
But yeah, I'd agree with that.
Sometimes he just misses it so bad. Sometimes he's just spot on. Some people would say this is his best movie, which I can understand that. I think this is his best paranormal movie. Some people will point to Signs. Signs was pretty good. But I think really the best non-paranormal movie that he's made is the Shattered trilogy, which I just ordered it. Or it's actually Unbreakable. I got Unbreakable, Shattered, and Glass.
No, Split.
Split. That's what it is. I haven't seen the middle one. I only saw the first and the last one. So I ordered all three of them on the back of this. I was watching this and I was going, man, I got to get those superhero movies. Shyamalan's take on the superhero universe, even though I think that's getting kind of passe now, Marvel run that into the ground. Really, I loved his take on on superheroes.
Yeah, it was a real original thing. And like yeah. I said, I don't, you know, I've seen enough of his quote unquote bad movies to kind of know what I'm going to get into. But there's some of them that I haven't seen. You know, like I know he did Devil. I don't even know if he directed that one, but that one about the devil in the elevator or whatever. I heard that one was okay. But I kind of feel like after The Village, Lady in the Water, stuff like that, it was kind of like his name kind of became Poison, which to me...
Not really fair, but that's what happened.
Well, yeah, it's not. Yeah. But it's like, it's really, really, it's amazing to me how The Sixth Sense happened. Because you have to think, when this came out in 1999, Shyamalan had done... I think he'd written a couple minor kind of movies. He did like an indie film. He did kind of some throwaway comedy that didn't really go anywhere. And the fact that he directed this movie and this was the second highest grossing movie of that year after Star Wars, The Phantom Menace.
Yeah.
Second. It was a massive cultural phenomenon.
I saw it in the theater. It was a hit. It was a hit. And it was good. It was great in the theater in 99. You're like, damn. And really what did it was the acting one, all right? Willis had a lot to do with it. And then the twist. And that's the thing. The twist was really great on this one. What was the name of this one again?
The Sixth Sense.
Sixth Sense. The problem is that real quick, Shyamalan became the twist guy. And there was and that fucked him up.
I think that really contributed to his downfall because... This movie was so successful. Like I said, it didn't only make all the money, but it really seeped into the public consciousness in a way that a lot of movies don't. I mean, if you go up to somebody right now and say, I see dead people, every fucking person on earth knows what you're talking about.
Yeah, I kind of checked out on Shyamalan after that until I saw Unbreakable. And I saw Unbreakable by accident. I can't remember where I first saw it. I think I saw it on cable. And I was like, this is that dude who did Sixth Sense? I was like, God, this is fantastic. And then I tried to see the other two. I saw the last one in the theater. And his take on superheroes was, to me, spot on. Semi-paranormal. If people were really superheroes, what would they be like? You know what I mean? They wouldn't be like what Marvel showed you. They would be mortal humans with weird abilities, you know? Bordering on paranormal. Yeah, they are paranormal. That'd be the paranormal abilities. And it would be kind of semi-horror. And that superhero trilogy kind of was had a horror element to it. There was horror undertones. And then when Brightburn came out, that you were primed for Brightburn by Shyamalan's trilogy. Brightburn came out, and I liked that too. I want more of that, but they stopped making those.
Yeah, well, remember like that? I said, there's a show that a bunch of people have recommended to us called The Boys, which is kind of that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Where superheroes or supervillains or whatever. Like, yeah. It's kind of like that.
Yeah, so Shyamalan was important in that venue, in that genre, and in Paranormal also, on the back of this movie.
Yeah, and like I said, I think for a long time, even though I really liked this movie when it came out, and I still think it's a brilliant movie, I had a grudge against it because it overshadowed Stir of Echoes, which needs more people to see it. But I'm glad that I watched it again, because watching it again, I'm amazed at how fucking well constructed this movie is. And I was kind of trying to break it down and look at all the scenes and everything. Because like I said, the first time I saw it, and it's pretty crazy like nowadays, because I think even people that haven't seen it know what the twist is, right? I mean, yeah. I kind of feel like everybody's, because it's just it was so ubiquitous and so many people have seen it since then. But I hadn't seen it since I knew what the twist was. So I was really interested in like watching all the scenes and seeing how it all played out and how he constructed it, that I liked this twist ending because the thing about it, I think a lot of people when they make movie makers, when they make a movie with a twist ending, because I feel like that's kind of a big thing. The shitty thing is that, yeah, it's a twist ending. Oh, it's a big shock and everything like that. But it's really hard to do a twist ending that you sort of set up through the whole thing without people guessing it. And I think that he did an amazing fucking job doing that on this movie, because I think most people did not see it coming. But then when it did come, everything like fell into place and it made sense. And then when you watch it again, you're like, oh, I can't believe I missed all of the clues that he seeded through there like so cleverly.
Yeah.
It was just like an amazing, amazing.
Missing the clue is what gives you the rewatchability of the movie. Because yeah. A lot of twist movies are not rewatchable.
Yeah.
You can only watch them once.
Well, sometimes the twist just kind of comes out of nowhere. Yeah. Like it's not even set up. Like they just did it for the sake of doing it.
Yeah. And then once you know the twist is coming, that's not effective. And this one you can watch, see multiple viewings, because you can see all the little things that you missed.
And it's not only, and it's not only that, but I think another thing that contributes to kind of the brilliance of this movie and the rewatchability of it is, like you said, the acting performance is amazing. Bruce Willis was amazing. I forgot how good Haley Joel Osment was in this movie. That kid was incredible.
And the woman that played his mom, too.
Toni Collette. She's amazing at everything. She was also in Hereditary. She should have got a fucking Oscar for that, but she didn't. She got nominated for this one, I think. Haley Joel Osment also got nominated for an Oscar for this movie as well. This was actually nominated for a shit ton. I don't think it won any, or it just won a couple. But so everybody did, like, kind of note. And the thing about it is that it's creepy, and it's a ghost story, and there's, like, some creepy scenes in it. But I had forgotten how, like, heartfelt this movie was. You know what I mean? Like, how it was just thematically... The whole thing is kind of thematically about how people have trouble like communicating with one another, not just dead people, but living people as well. And it's almost kind of like, I really loved something that I didn't really pick up on the first time that I saw in the theater back in the 90s, was that Bruce Willis, who like, in case you're from Mars or something like that, and you don't know what the fucking twist is, Bruce Willis was dead the whole time, okay?
He's a ghost.
Pretty much everybody knows that by now, so I just don't feel like I'm spoiling it. But his journey to accepting that he's dead and doing, you know, the things that he wanted to do before he went off into the ether plane or whatever, his journey parallels the journey of Cole, the 9-year-old boy, who has been, because he can see ghosts, but because when he tries to tell people about it, they react negatively to it because they don't believe him, or they think he's got mental issues or whatever. So he's kind of learned to keep everything to himself. So he doesn't tell his mom anything. He doesn't tell anybody anything. And so him getting to a point where he can actually tell his mom, hey, I see dead people. And I talked to your mom. I talked to grandma and I talked to all these other people. And her finally believing him sort of like opened up that line of communication, parallels also Bruce Willis's character, Dr. Crowe, or Malcolm, as they usually call him in the movie. Finally being able to, one, realize he's dead, and two, tell his wife what he wanted to tell her, like, before he, you know, before he died, and then he, like, kind of passes on. So I think that's, a, like, a really cool thing that it was threaded all through there.
It was his first big movie. I don't know, I'm sure he made other ones before it, but we probably don't know him.
There was an indie movie, I can't remember what it was called, and then there was one that was like some stupid like kids comedy or something like that. I don't even know if he directed that. I think he just wrote it.
A lot of times a director will really, his first movie from a big studio is really well crafted, so you, because they spent a lot of time on it, they want to put their best foot forward, and this is their first and maybe their last project, so they just fucking give it everything, and you can see that this is a well crafted movie. The more I think about it, this movie, Unbreakable, this movie,
The Sixth Sense.
I always forget that because it starts with a number.
Yeah.
You know, that's probably. But Sixth Sense probably, it could be in the same universe as Unbreakable and Glass and Shattered and all that.
Split,
that's right. Because he could be, you could consider him a superhero. I mean, that's the way Mephisto would be probably.
Yeah.
If he was a real person, like this kid.
I think this is generally, I mean, it's generally classed as a horror movie because it's kind of, it's a ghost story. It's got like some creepy shit in it. I think it's mostly like classified as like a psychological, like a thriller or a drama or something like that, which it mostly kind of is because, as I said, I had forgotten, I remembered, you know, the twist, obviously. I remembered a lot of the real creepy scenes, like the scene where that girl like shows up in his tent and, you know, is throwing up and everything. And the one scene that really got me, the first time I saw it, was when Cole is like going down the hall in the bathroom and he comes back and he sees this kid that looks like a regular kid, but obviously, you know, it's a dead kid because he's not supposed to be in the house. And he says something like, "Hey, come on, I know where my dad keeps the gun." Then he turns around and like the back of his head is blown off.
Yeah.
And it's like, I remember that freaking me out really bad. So it's like, I really like the way it's a ghost story, but you're seeing the ghosts the way Cole sees them, and he just sees them, like he said, like regular people just walking around, so you don't necessarily know. So it's not like this kind of like, ooh, big jump scare or anything. It's like he sees a person, you're like, oh my God, that's a fucking dead person, and that's like really creepy. And in some ways, I think that's like even creepier than them being all like fucking luminous or whatever. I think that's like way creepier. And like I said, I think one of the things that makes it work is that kid is just, man, that kid, I totally bought that kid could see dead people, and his whole entire life, he was like so super fucked up about it, because you would be. If you're a little kid, he's like 9 years old. He's kind of like, you know, introverted. Everybody picks on him because they think he's a weirdo and all this other kind of shit. And you just saw like really upsetting looking people, and you know that they're dead, and they're usually like all fucked up, you know what I mean, because it's however they died, that's how he sees them, like, because he sees this one woman later that's like all half burned and shit. If you saw that your whole entire life, you'd probably be a little messed up too, you know. And so I really bought his character, so I really liked like the interaction between, you know, him and Bruce Willis's character Malcolm, who they're kind of like helping each other move on from, you know, the pain that they're going through. And I just think that was really, really well done. I mean, watching it again, knowing what the twist is, one, there's so many fucking clues, and it just kills me that I didn't get it the first time, but I think most people didn't. I don't think anybody fucking called it, did they? I mean, maybe. I'm sure there was like one person that called it like the first time they saw it. They were like, oh, he's dead the whole time. Because I feel like that twist has been done a lot of times since then. And it had been done a few times before that, but I don't think it was like a really commonly known trope. I'm sure it's been done now like a zillion times. But I kind of feel like it wasn't common enough back then that a lot of people would have guessed, because I feel like most people didn't, which is why everybody was like freaking talking about it. But there were so many clues. The one clue, and I didn't even register this one the first time I saw it, was that really, really terrible magic trick that Malcolm does for Cole, where he says he has like a penny in his hand, and he's like, and then I put it in my pocket, but he doesn't show, like he moves it around, but he doesn't show that that's where the penny is. And then he goes, and then it's back in my hand again. And then Cole's like, that's a stupid trick. The penny was there the whole time, he says to him. So there was that, like, you know, so the whole movie is a magic trick where the same thing, you know, the same thing was happening the whole time. I didn't pick up on that. And then there was the whole scene where Cole after he's at that kid's birthday party and they lock him in that fucking dumbwaiter or whatever it is. And that ghost like beats the crap out of him or whatever, which they don't show. And I think that that's good. Like you just see the aftermath and he's in the hospital and, you know, Malcolm's in there talking to him. And Cole, pretty much, that's when Cole says to him, he's like, you know, my secret is I see dead people. And he's like, no, I just see them walking around like normal people. And then he's looking right at Bruce Willis and he says, they're walking around like normal people. They don't see each other and they don't know that they're dead. And then they do like a, like right there, I'm looking at Bruce Willis's face. And like the fact that I didn't catch on to that is just, that's kind of, that's what I mean about this movie being like just this brilliant magic trick. And it's like, I hate to say it because it sounds like dismissive like that, but you know, because that sounds like that's all it is. So I was really glad to watch it again because it really does have a high rewatchability factor, not just because of the twist, not just because you're looking for all the clues that are seeded throughout there, which is cool. But honestly, the characters, the acting, just the cinematography of it is really beautiful. There's just so many like context clues. And he said something about, because I was watching a little bit of a snippet of an interview with him, and he was talking about how the entire movie, they pretty much shot it in these real like somber kind of tones, and they didn't want any red in it other than in particular ways because they wanted to use red as a symbol. And he specifically said, I wanted the color red to be a symbol of an object that had interacted with the other side. You know what I mean? So it's like you see the, you know, the doorknob that Bruce Willis's character is trying to, he keeps trying to open and he can't open it. That doorknob is red. The red balloon that goes up to the ceiling, like before Cole gets that like scary ghost that's in the dumbwaiter. Cole wearing a red sweater before he, you know, interacts with a ghost a particular time. So it's like they were very, very meticulous about the color symbolism in this too, and like even said about it, and I thought that was cool. Another thing that I didn't notice until I watched a thing about it was that Bruce Willis's character is wearing the same clothes throughout the whole movie. It's just that you don't notice because it's just like this kind of plain, you know, blue dress shirt, his kind of overcoat or whatever. And, you know, the shirt and pants that he's wearing underneath, that was what was wearing, that's what he was wearing when he got shot, like at the beginning of the movie. So it's almost kind of like hinting that, that he can't like change, you know what I mean? Because that's, he can't like really interact with the, with objects, like with real objects. Because if you notice the one scene where he goes to the restaurant to the anniversary dinner or whatever, and his wife is there. And when you first see it, you think, oh, she's just mad at him because he was late and it was their anniversary. And she's just being like, she was just like, yeah, fuck you, buddy, or whatever. And doesn't talk to him. If you notice when he sits down in the chair, he doesn't push the chair back. He just sits in the chair. You know what I mean? So he can't interact with objects in the real world. The only time that he does is when he sees his wife and that dude that she works with, and they're kind of like going to kiss or whatever. And then the window of the shop breaks. You don't see him break it, but you're just presuming that because he was like so mad, like all the paranormal energy, like did some poltergeist shit and like broke the window. Like the first time you see it, you think he broke it like as a person. But now that you know that he's a ghost, he, you know, it's, he was, his energy was coming from the other side to break the window because he was so upset. You know what I'm saying? Another thing too, that I didn't catch. One, I didn't catch that the guy that shot him, like the crazy guy that came, broke into his house in the beginning of the line, shot him and then shot himself. That was Donnie Wahlberg. I didn't realize because his face was so
who's that
contorted. You know, Mark Wahlberg, the guy that's in all, he was in Pain and Gain and all that. That's his brother. Like Donnie was the one that was in New Kids on the Block, I think. Yeah, right?
I don't know.
I think Donnie was in New Kids on the Block. No, I mean the band.
Oh, I've never seen it.
The boy band?
No, I've never seen it.
Yeah.
I was in the army, man. I was overseas.
Well, no, I'm just saying that Donnie Wahlberg, I think, was in that. Mark Wahlberg was his brother, but Mark had Marky Mark and the Funky Bunch and all that.
Yeah, that's kind of before my
later. Well, that was, well, no, that was like 90s. So I didn't realize that it was him, but then, because I saw his name in the credits and I'm like, wait, I don't remember him being in this. And then I was like, oh yeah, shit. Another thing too that I had forgotten about was that that character, you know, he ends up shooting him because, you know, because the doctor like failed him or whatever. And now he's grown up and he got out of wherever and he like shot him. And I didn't realize that that character, whose name is Vincent, was pretty much just like Cole in that he could also see dead people. And you don't realize that until later on when Malcolm is like listening to his old tapes. And when he's listening to the tapes of Vincent when he was a kid, and then he leaves the room at some point, and then on the tape recorder, he can hear like this kind of ghostly voice, like speaking in Spanish or whatever, like really low. So that gave him another motivation for wanting to help Cole, because he had failed to help Vincent, who to him was kind of like not the same person, but he was like really similar. So he was trying to redeem himself, I guess, like before he died, even though he didn't know that he was dead. But it's just like there were so many little things that I think I really missed the first time around. See, this is what I mean. This is why every movie like this, it's good to watch it two times. Because the first time that you see it, you're just kind of, you don't know what's going to happen. So you're just kind of like, you know, trying to keep up with everything and trying to make all the connections and everything like that. But I think that particularly a movie like this that is so ingenious in the way that it's constructed and, you know, is so ingenious in the way it lays all the clues out, like, so you can see, you know, so the end, like, makes sense. It's kind of like watching it again is just, it's almost like taking a film class, you know what I mean? Because you can see every single little thing and every single, like, plot construction. And so that's why I think, like, movies like this, you definitely need to see them, like, two times. But yeah, so honestly, I kind of feel bad because I think I, for a long time, I've been not bad-mouthing this movie exactly because I remember really liking it, but I remember being really pissed that it was so popular and it kind of like, you know, kind of bulldozed over some other movies that came out that year. The fucking Blair Witch Project also came out that year, which was also a massive cultural phenomenon. But
yeah, that was weird. I never got that one.
Yeah,
I didn't like it.
I liked it. I saw it in the theater. I didn't think it was real, but you have to admit that movie was a marketing, that was like a genius marketing.
I'd have to see it again, because at the time, it was so different from everything else. I just found it to be unwatchable.
Well, it's, yeah.
Did not like it.
I mean, the thing about it now is that there's been so many found footage that you could, actually, you could probably watch it now because you're familiar with that.
Right. Even though I don't like found footage movies. I mean, pretty much everyone I've seen, I didn't like them.
I generally don't like them either, but I've seen some good ones. And I actually did like the Blair Witch Project.
It doesn't feel like cinema. So it feels like something else, like a documentary or something. And I just don't like them. I haven't found a found footage movie that I liked.
I have several that I like. I tend to like mockumentaries more than found footage, but I have seen some really good found footage ones. It just kind of depends on how it's done. And, you know, like I said, I've kind of talked about that before, but, you know, so this coming out, the Blair Witch Project coming out, it was just these two big like horror movie juggernauts. And I was mad because Stir Rebecca has kind of got lost in the shuffle, which is still a great movie and still everyone should see it. But so I feel like for a long time, I was kind of like pissed off about Sixth Sense. I'm like, God damn you, Sixth Sense. Like, why were you so popular? And like, you just trampled all the other movies in the dirt. But watching it again, I can see why it was such a cultural phenomenon. Well, because like I said, it really seemed to, I mean, because not only was it kind of creepy, you know, the acting was good and everything like that, but I think there was really something in the heart of it that really like resonated with people. Like I said, this whole theme about kind of communication and how people had difficulty communicating with one another. And in a lot of ways in the movies, like the dead people and the live people are the same, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think that was really, really well handled. And I mean, like for a supernatural movie, I think the best ghost stories are, you know, the kinds where you do this kind of thing, where you have this kind of heart to it, where you're saying something about living people as well. And I think this one was probably one of the primary examples of that. And that's why I think it was so fucking good. I had just forgotten how fucking good this movie was. And like I said, I felt kind of bad for like saying some bad shit. I didn't say bad shit about it, but it's like you said, I think that it was a shame too, that this was Shyamalan's like first big movie. And then after this, because everybody just, this got such good word of mouth and the big thing was the twist, then he became known. It's everybody expected him to do that.
He was called the twist guy.
Yeah. And it's like, and the thing about it is that this movie worked because nobody knew who he was. Nobody knew that there was going to be a big twist at the end. They were just watching the movie. Yeah. But if you're watching a movie and you expect that there's going to be a twist, you can't really like relax and enjoy it because you're trying to be fucking clever and trying to figure out what the twist is going to be the whole time. And you're not really like invested in the movie or invested in the characters because you're too busy trying to figure it out.
Yes, this one came out, the twist, it was a hit. And then like his next two or three movies after this, I don't remember if it was two or three, were also kind of like twist movies. But they failed. And it was because he was known as the twist guy.
And yes, it seemed that's like a bad, like, fucking... It wasn't his fault, really.
Maybe they asked him to do that. I don't know. But he came across as kind of like a hack director for a little while. He made a comeback, though. He stuck around. He made a comeback. Some people might say, well, Signs was a comeback. Yeah, maybe. I didn't really like that movie. It was just okay. I liked Unbreakable.
And Signs didn't really have a twist ending.
No, he stopped the twist thing.
I mean, other than, oh, the aliens, you know, are killed by water. That's not really a twist, though.
No.
The only other one that I saw that had a real big twist at the end was The Village, which I should probably watch that again because I saw it in the theater and I didn't love it, but I didn't hate it. You know what I mean? I was like, that was okay. I didn't see the twist coming necessarily. I don't know if you guys know what the twist of The Village is. It's not as well known, I don't think, as the Sixth Sense one because The Village wasn't as well. I don't know. I feel like I'd have to watch that one again. But it kind of suffered from that too because I remember seeing that one in the theater and being like, this is going to have a twist ending. So then I was trying to figure it out. I couldn't help it.
Yeah, it just... He came off after this when he came off as a hack for a little while.
Yeah, because he was trying to. And like I said, I don't know if that was what he wanted to do or if they were like, maybe, hey, you got to do a twist because that was like so successful. But like I said, the reason it was successful is because no one was expecting it.
Yeah.
The whole thing about a twist is you're not supposed to expect it.
Once he got out of the twist thing and just went back to create and tell good stories, he got great. He got great again. Like I said, I got to hand it to him. He stuck around long enough to launch a comeback. And I could probably go back and watch some of his failed twist movies. And they're probably okay to watch, you know, today. They probably aged okay. But back in those days, you knew it was coming. And when it was new, you were kind of skeptical of the movie anyway. And when the movie really didn't quite pan out, it was easy to go, ah, fuck that. But there's something about once a director's been around for a while, it's harder to blow off his old catalog.
True.
I don't know why. It's like you get more credibility as you go.
Yeah.
And because he recovered and came out with some really cool shit, I imagine you can go back and watch some of his movies that kind of failed at the box office. You probably enjoy them.
Although I've heard that one of his more recent ones, I mean recent relatively, The Happening, I heard that was awful. But I also heard it was awful, like unintentionally hilarious, just for being so. I've seen clips of it and it looks pretty bad.
People have to shit about movies that I loved.
Well, I know that. Like I said, so I'm not saying, I'm just saying that The Happening is one, like a recent one that he did that a lot of people said was just so bad it was hilarious. But I haven't seen it, so I'm not saying that.
All directors are hit and miss. I mean,
fuck. Sure.
And Lucas is hit and miss. I mean, fucking Spielberg.
Everybody is. I mean, nobody can hit shit out of the park
the first
time. Yeah. And like I said, I don't, you know, watching The Sixth Sense again really made it kind of hit home to me. I was like, this guy is actually a brilliant director. It's just a lot of his movies, for whatever reason, were not nearly as good as this one. And I'm not entirely sure why that is. It might be entirely up to him. It might be up to other factors. I'm not really sure.
It's writing, time, budget, on-screen chemistry. Because
he writes his own shit, too.
I think chemistry has a lot to do with it, too. I mean, had you changed that cast around on The Sixth Sense, it wouldn't have been as good.
That's true, because they did actually get... Yeah. I mean, it was a small cast, but man...
They all worked together.
Bruce Willis, they got Haley Joel Osment, who was just... I mean, this was kind of his first big movie, and he was fucking brilliant. Toni Collette is always fucking brilliant. So the fact that they got all these really amazing actors in it...
You're just not... When your first time you see the movie in the theater, you're just not expecting Bruce Willis to be a ghost.
Yeah.
Especially if you were my age back then. That's like you're going to see a Stallone movie and it turns out Stallone's a ghost. You're not expecting Stallone to be a fucking ghost.
No one expects Stallone to be a ghost.
That bitch is like 90 more push-ups than me, you know? Yeah, you're fucking slow, you old man. I like to fucking see Stallone. I like me Stallone.
Now I want to see a movie where Stallone is a ghost the whole time.
Yeah.
But, well, that's another thing, too, and that's another reason why this worked is because it's almost kind of like, and I saw a video pointing this out, they're like, it's almost like Bruce Willis is like an unreliable narrator, but it works because he's not aware that he's an unreliable narrator. Right. He doesn't know that he's dead. He thinks he's still alive, and he's just, like, fucking around.
But that's part of the movie.
That's what I mean.
That's why the movie was so powerful.
And it's like, that's why it really, really worked.
It dawns on him that he's a ghost, and you're going, fuck. You're going, fuck, along with him, going, fuck, dude, you're a ghost. And he's going, what, I'm a ghost?
I think that was my exact reaction in the theater. Yeah, I was like, fuck,
you're a ghost.
And when that wedding ring falls on the floor.
I'm a ghost. Yeah.
I was just kind of like, get the fuck out of here.
Yeah, you had to be there at the time.
Well, like I said, and in a way, I feel kind of bad for people that are young and are watching this movie already knowing what the twist is.
Yeah.
Because when it came out, nobody knew.
And out of the context of the time, it was 99.
Yeah.
Bruce Willis was an action hero.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
You didn't expect him to be, you expected him to be like a hero or a detective. He was a detective on TV too. It was Heart to Heart, I think is what the name of it.
No, Moonlighting.
Moonlighting. That's what it was.
That was back in the 90s.
In the 90s.
Yeah.
Moonlighting. Yeah. He was kind of a detective type like 80s, dude. 90s. And then he was on Die Hard and, you know, he did shit like that. He was not the ghost.
Yeah.
All right. When that came, and for the first time, he goes, fuck, he's the ghost. He's going, fuck, I'm a ghost. I'm not a psychologist. I'm a ghost. You know, that kind of, you know. And you're like, whoa. The whole time, man. You didn't know. I didn't know. You know? That was the whole thing of the movie. That was the twist that they were talking about.
Yeah.
Was that minute you realized that that dude was the ghost.
And had been
the whole time.
The whole entire time.
And it was because it was Bruce Willis was part of it. That was Bruce Willis. If that had been any other actor, it wouldn't have had the same impact.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. His filmography up to that point, his reputation up to that point really played into why that movie worked so
It'd
well.
It'd be like saying Arnold Schwarzenegger was the ghost.
Yeah, you just didn't see.
You never saw that coming, you know?
Yeah.
Or The Rock was the ghost. It'd be like that. Wait a minute, The Rock was the ghost? You didn't see it coming.
Yeah.
You know, and that's kind of cool though. I like it when a strong actor like that, and I call him a strong actor, like a physically strong actor, guy who plays heroic roles, when he steps outside of the alpha male hero fucking role and does some shit totally unexpected, like Rock's role in Pain and Gain.
Yeah.
He was a bodybuilder, but he was like a Bible thumper, just a real Jesus freak. You know what I mean? And he's based on a character in real life who was like that. And they weren't sure if they wanted to give that to The Rock. But The Rock says, no, I want to do it. I want to do it. And he pulled it off. And I think that's one of The Rock's best roles.
I think so, too.
And he played a bad guy who was a Jesus freak. But he was trying to help the captive.
Yeah.
And he was good-hearted. You know, he's in jail, though, the real dude. But he's in there singing his hymns. Because that's where he was, you know. That's what kind of person he was. So, and I think Bruce Willis doing this role was kind of like equivalent to The Rock doing that role. You didn't see it really coming.
And I mean, the thing about it too is that Bruce Willis, I mean, he nailed all the emotional stuff in this.
Yeah.
Because so many of the scenes are just with him and Haley Joel Osment. And a lot of the scenes are like really emotionally, like there's a lot of grief and there's a lot of, you know, and stuff like that. And he really, really fucking nailed it. So like I mean, the chemistry between him and that little boy were like really, really amazing too. I mean, I think that really fucking worked.
Yeah.
So, it, like you said, I think that really did kind of play into it, just the fucking casting in this.
Yeah, and that kid.
Lightning in a bottle.
And that kid, we saw him right after this. We watched another movie right after this. It was Tusk. And he's in that movie, too. We didn't realize it.
See how weird that is? That happens to me. That happens to me a lot. Yeah. Like, a lot of times I won't really think about it. Because it's like, you know, we watched The Sixth Sense, you know, so we could record the thing.
Yeah.
And then after it, we said, well, let's watch Tusk. because even then we've seen it before, but I was like, well, you know, we wanted to do that for the matinee show, which, you know, you guys saw the other day. And I was like, I had completely forgotten that grown-up Haley Joel Osment was in Tusk.
Yeah. And he hasn't changed a whole lot. He looks about like
his face looks exactly the same. Yeah. He's just bigger.
Yeah. He's bigger. He was perfectly cast in this role. He's this little cute kid.
He was so serious.
He was this little serious with his little haircut and his little teeth and shit.
And his big glasses. Weird,
but the ghosts are coming to see me, you know, that kind of shit, you know. And he was just the right actor for that role.
I mean, he was just so, like, I think, and I don't even like kids, and I especially don't like child
actors. Yeah, mostly don't like them.
And I especially don't like child actors.
Yeah.
But he seemed so together, and he seemed so adult.
Yeah.
And as soon as you first see him, and he's so small, and he has that little face, and it's just kind of like, he's like a little cherub, and like your heart just went out to him, you know what I mean? Because I'm like, oh man, that poor kid.
I don't want to say I don't like kids. There's some kids that are cool, just a lot of kids are demonic.
In general, I'm not a fan. In general,
And whining a lot, and just, man, knock it the fuck off.
Well, and like I said, it's, you know, kids in real life, I can take them or leave them, but it's just like, I don't like a lot of child actors.
Yeah.
I tend to like, if a kid's in a movie and the kid is like an adult, but not like an asshole adult, like just a regular, normal, cool adult, then that kid will be okay.
Yeah.
I don't like when they put a kid in the movie and they're just like all snarky and, hey, I'm a kid, I'm a brat, rah, rah, rah. I don't like that kind of shit.
In real life, though, and with kids, the girls tend to be a lot easier to deal with than the boys.
Big time.
But some boys, they're just like, they just want to talk about certain kind of toys and airplanes and shit. And that's easy to deal with. It's the ones that are just constantly fucking crying and fucking asking for shit or bothering you. You know, or trying to fucking one-up you constantly, or ones that just constantly won't stop lying. They've got those types. It's just, you know. It's just like people, you know.
People and like kids don't really know how to be like an adult person yet.
Yeah.
So it's like they kind of feel like, until they're a little bit older, they kind of feel like the whole world revolves around them. Yeah. So they don't really understand.
Right.
Like that other people have feelings, or that other people have shit to do, or something like that. I mean, you know, I grew up around, I don't have any kids, but I grew up around a lot. I have three siblings who are all awesome, and they're all younger. But for a long time, my parents ran a daycare, so I was around little kids all the time. And I have like a million cousins.
I was usually only around cousins.
Yeah.
And all my boy cousins, they just want to talk about guns and the army and shit, you know, because I was in the army, so they want to talk about that. But that's not that bad. And the girls just want to talk about stuff and show you things. Look at this, look. Look. Yeah. Look at that one. It's kind of cute, you know what I mean? But
it is.
Yeah.
But sometimes you're just kind of like, okay, I got shit to do. Yeah. Mommy needs to go get a whiskey.
Yeah,
right. You know what I mean? It's that kind of shit. I'm going to go outside. But yeah, so I really think that they really nailed, you know, the kid actor in this, because he elicits so much sympathy from you, you know, from the jump, just because of what he looks like. And he's just so, so serious. And he's just so, he seems like such a sweet kid. And he's got like these horrible, horrible problems.
Yeah.
Because like I said, if you were like a little 9-year-old kid and you'd seen like horrifying dead people all your life and didn't know what to do about it, then that would be pretty traumatizing. And no one believed you. That would be pretty traumatizing.
Yeah.
So, and he definitely, definitely sells that. So we have anything else we'd like to add about what?
Well, I'm just saying, you know, what more to add about this? I mean, I don't care what Jenny says. I think this is right there with his trilogy. This character could be one of those superhero, supervillain characters. Even though it is a ghost story, that could also be a super paranormal superhero story. That's like something Mephisto would do if he really existed, talking to the dead, seeing the dead, or something along that lines. It has a very different tone than his trilogy, superhero trilogy, but it could be in that same universe.
Yeah, it could be.
Yeah.
But like you said, it is a different tone. This is a very... Yeah. I had forgotten how melancholy this movie was. Which, actually, that's not a bad thing about it, because I really like that.
It's supposed to be that way.
Yeah, it's melancholy. But it's also real hopeful at the end. Because, like I said, they both resolve their issues at the end. And they, you know, they grow as people. And, well, he doesn't grow as people. He just goes into heaven or whatever it was. He goes into the white light, you know what I mean? Because he did what he had to do. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I really like that it has that kind of like hopeful, like optimistic sort of message at the end. I was watching this thing earlier that compared it. They said in a lot of ways, this is almost kind of like the optimistic good version of The Exorcist. And I was like, oh yeah, I didn't think about that, but it is like actually really similar. Whereas like this is kind of the angelic version of The Exorcist being the demonic kind of shit. Because like a little girl that has to deal with all this kind of, you know, like a little kid that has to deal with like all this supernatural shit.
My story is the real story of The Exorcist.
You weren't possessed by demons, though.
No, it was back really. Back in the Middle Ages, they'd say they would have said I was.
Well, yeah, I'm sure they would have.
And I'm pretty sure that some of the people that really were, quote unquote, possessed, it was poltergeist, RSPK.
Yeah,
might have. Recurrent spontaneous psychokinesis.
Yeah.
Matter of fact, in that movie, when they went to go test the girl, didn't they just, when he opened the drawer and everything, you know what I mean? Didn't the two fathers think, well, this might just be psychokinesis?
I think one of them did use that word, although, like I said, I can't really remember.
Yeah, and they weren't sure if it was actually, because he's like, that wasn't holy water.
Yeah.
Remember that?
Yeah.
She was squirming around, you know. It wasn't holy water, it was just regular water.
It's like, yeah, we're just fucking with it.
Right.
That's how priests do.
Yeah.
It's like, no, it's just tap water, bitch. Yeah. We got you. It burns.
Yeah.
Love it. All right, so The Sixth Sense is actually on Amazon Prime. If you have an Amazon Prime subscription, you can watch it for free. Actually, Unbreakable is on there for free as well. We'll probably end up watching that
one. You haven't seen Unbreakable? See, well, I got all three of them
coming. I haven't seen it in a long time, but yeah.
I'm going to see it in my Blu-ray. Yeah. It'll probably be here tonight.
Probably, tomorrow. Yeah. He got the whole trilogy.
But
I was really, really glad to revisit this because, you know what? I could have sworn that I had seen it since I saw it in the theater, but I guess I didn't. So it was really cool, like, to watch it a second time and, like, kind of analyze it, you know, because that's, you know, how I like to do.
You can get M. Night Shyamalan's superhero trilogy, if that's what you want to call it, off of Amazon Prime on Blu-ray, delivered to your door about $30 if you get all three of them. That's a pretty good deal. It's $10 a disc.
Yeah.
On Blu-ray. I like to have my Blu-ray, man, like a hard copy. That way they can't go back and change any shit. I got the original. You know what I'm talking about? I don't need their damn fucking internet connection or anything. You know what I mean? If hurricane hits me, I'll just use battery operated and watch those Blu-rays.
Yeah, there you go.
Yep. For the end of the world, I still got my fucking movies. Apocalypse movies.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So we will see you guys on the next one. Bye.